You're listening to Idaho Matters. I'm Samantha Wright, filling in for Jim McGaudette. There's another virus causing problems in Idaho, along with COVID, RSV, and the flu. Now we've got strep making the rounds in the Treasure Valley. Plus, if you've already had COVID and think the worst is over, well, think again. New research is showing that long-term after effects of the coronavirus can really mess with your brain. Joining us today, Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System and a current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force. And if you have a question for the doc, send it in now, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. Welcome back, Dr. Pate.
Thanks, Samantha.
Hey there. So I had a doctor tell me this week that along with COVID, the flu, and RSV, which are all putting stress on our healthcare systems, we now have an outbreak of strep to worry about. So can we talk about strep? What is it and how it works?
Yeah. So the particular issue is something called group A strep, and that's very common. And it's a bacteria. If you've had kids, you know that you have worried about, on occasion, them having strep throat, which is a very common infection. There does seem, although it can happen really throughout the year, we have a little seasonality to it in that we typically see more of it in the winter and in the spring. And it's very contagious and can spread in schools. And so, you know, what was remarkable was going back to 2020, when we were taking a lot of precautions and we were masking in schools, not only did we not see a lot of the respiratory viruses like RSV and influenza, we also didn't see much strep throat then too, because it helps protect against that too. But what is striking now is when you think about strep throat, that's what we call non-invasive. In other words, it's pretty easy to treat. We get somebody on antibiotics. If you don't recognize it and don't treat it, some bad things can happen. But usually we recognize it, treat it, and it's very, very treatable with some very simple antibiotics. What happened is in the UK, they started reporting an unusual increase in invasive group A strep. So it's the same bacteria, but actually there are many forms of that bacteria. And what they're showing from their work is that it tends to be bacteria that is causes a little bit more serious disease and has acquired more ways to get around our immune system, which is a recurring theme of not controlling various pathogens. And so what happened is that in the UK, they typically just get their spike during the spring, but they saw a spike in the summer, which is unusual for them. Then it seemed to be subsiding, and then another big uptake lately. And although deaths are uncommon and they're small numbers, they've had four times more deaths of children than would be expected. So this kind of sounded the alarm. Then what we found is now some other countries are reporting the same thing: Ireland, Wales. And so there's a number of other countries. France is seeing this. And most recently, the Minnesota Department of Health just announced that they are seeing twice the amount of invasive group A strep that they normally would. And when we call it invasive, what that is relating to is when we start seeing strep infections in places where there's not normally bacteria. In your mouth and throat, we all have lots of bacteria, and it's not unusual to find strep in there. But now we're talking about things like getting in your bloodstream, getting into the muscles, getting into the deep skin. Some people will remember stories about flesh-eating bacteria. And so that necrotizing fasciitis is a form of invasive strep. So there's a lot of things. Also, pregnant women will remember that usually their obstetrician will test them to see if they have group a strap in their vagina, because when they deliver the child, that increases the risk that the child could get a serious infection when it's born. So, but when we start seeing the strep in places where it's not normally, that's what we talk about, the invasive group A strep. And so Minnesota reported a doubling just, I think last week they just reported and sent out a health advisory. Now the CDC is saying they also are seeing, they're investigating what appears to be an increase in this condition nationally.
Wow. Okay. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say it's probably a really good idea to go see your doctor, because the one thing I am hearing you say, COVID, that's a virus, flu, that's a virus, RSV, that's a virus, but strep is a bacteria. And yes, instead of just looking puzzled at you and saying, you know, have some chicken soup, they can actually give you an antibiotic for that, right?
That's right. And the good news is that generally within 24 hours on the antibiotic, you're no longer contagious. And one, some more good news that we got out of the UK is this increase that we're seeing. It does not appear that it is because the bacteria has developed resistance to the antibiotics. In fact, the current isolates that they're getting actually are not as resistant as what we have seen in the past. The real problem is, while all of the strains they've identified are susceptible to various penicillins, we're having a national shortage in some of the most commonly used antibiotics for this, called amoxicillin. And in fact, I was helping a mother last week find it, because her child was diagnosed with strep throat and was very sick. So that's a challenge. We do have other antibiotics we can use, but they're more expensive and they generally are not as well tolerated by children. So this is a real issue.
It is. And I know we have some shortage of other medications as well, but you know, if we're getting outbreaks of strep, then, you know, not having the drug that's primarily used to treat it can be bad. I will say that if you go to your doctor, there is a strep test, pretty easy, and it's
yes,
pretty fast. You can get it right there in the doctor's office, and they can say you have it or you don't.
That's right. And it's very easy to take a swab and send it for a culture to see if it is group A strep, but it usually is.
Gotcha. All right. So let's talk about the other three, COVID, flu, RSV. And I know that some are calling it a triple-demic. And I just heard that our local Department of Health and Welfare, Idaho Health and Welfare, is going to have a briefing on the triple-demic that's going on in Idaho. It's going to be tomorrow at 2 o'clock. We're going to cover it here at Boise State Public Radio News. But I thought you might give us a preview, since we have mentioned the triple-demic a couple times before. It sounds like it's causing a problem in Idaho.
Well, it is. So even in normal years, we would tend to see RSV and influenza as part of our respiratory season, which we've just begun. So that is not shocking that we're seeing cases. What's really surprising is that we are seeing much higher levels of RSV and influenza much sooner than we normally would. What would normally peak here in Idaho, say January, February, we're seeing real high increases in both influenza and RSV now, and we have been seeing it for a couple of weeks, of what we normally wouldn't see until January or February. And this strain of the influenza virus, there's actually several strains that are circulating in the United States, but overwhelmingly, the most common is a what's called an H3N2 version of influenza. And that does tend to be make people a little bit sicker. And right now, we have the highest number of people hospitalized with influenza than we have in a year, in 12 years is right now. And the problem is, we don't know what's going to happen is what we can hope is it's kind of like Australia, that even though it's early, we get done with it early. You know, the worry is, what if it's early and it stays high for the normal time of the season, which doesn't end until May? You know, then that's a real problem. The similarly with the RSV, we've got very high levels for this time of the year, not the highest levels we've ever seen, but this is all happening at once. And there is a hopeful little downturn in terms of the number of cases of RSV identified, but and that's leading some to hope that maybe we've peaked. I don't think we can count on that yet. We can hope that's the case, but even in normal years, we see little ups and downs. So I'm not ready to say that this has peaked. I hope it has, but we're not sure. And then right at the same time, we are now starting to see the increase in COVID cases, COVID hospitalizations, and our test positivity is up to about 10%. And long-term listeners of the show will realize we always like that down below 5. So we've got a lot of stuff out there and not enough people taking enough precautions.
Ugh. Okay. Well, that's not encouraging. Let's stay on that not encouraging part. Dr. Pate, you've reactivated your COVID blog. Your latest post is about brain fog. It's another long-term COVID symptom. It's causing a lot of havoc for folks after they've gotten over the coronavirus. Give us a little idea of what is brain fog and how does it work?
Yeah. So we have long realized that there are people who get this brain fog. And this can be a matter of a loss of ability to focus. So, for example, where perhaps you are an avid reader, maybe now you're finding it hard to stay focused on reading and you can't read very much. It could be your memory that you're forgetting things. It could be just a sluggishness that you're having trouble understanding things as well as you did, especially more complicated. It can be a myriad of things. And I have alluded on the show for quite some time that we've placed too much focus on whether you die from COVID or not, and not enough on, as a country, not enough focus on some of these long-term health consequences, because when you talk to the people that are affected, and it appears to be, for the brain fog, it appears to be roughly about a third of people that get sick enough that they have to be hospitalized report this. Wow. And it's probably around 7% for people that even just have mild, what they thought was a mild infection. But I'm sure it's underreported because people don't want to admit that they're having this. And the scary thing is we can see this occurring really anytime and lasting, you know, up to as long as 2 years. And of course, that's, we don't have the ability to follow it much longer than that. So some people do tend to get over this and recover in a period of a month or a couple months or several months. Others have long lasting effect. And it has affected some people to the degree that they no longer are able to do their work that they were doing, or not do it for as long. They might be able to do it for a few hours, but they can't do a whole day of work because they just can't focus or concentrate or remember things. So it's fairly significant.
Dr. Pate, Ray wrote us and said, I've had 5 Moderna vaccines. The last one was the bivalent variation on September 9th. Am I caught up, or is there a newer vaccination out there?
That person is caught up. So very, very good for you. That's what you need to do. I think the most important message that the CDC, unfortunately, has not done a good job of, they may have left people with the impression that if you're all caught up with vaccinations, as this listener is, then you need not have any worries. It's true you don't need to worry about becoming severely ill or hospitalized or dying. However, with the immune evasive variants that we have out there, you are more vulnerable to getting an infection, and it's still miserable. So it's wonderful you're caught up with your vaccinations. That's going to protect your long-term health and life. But still, right now, especially with all the things out there, really important when you're out in the public, indoors, wear a high-quality mask.
Well, on that note, Sue wants to know, she says, Dr. Pate, you've talked about some of the other COVID vaccines being developed. Will we see a nasal vaccine or a pill form of the vaccine anytime soon?
I don't think we'll see a pill form. There has been some really great research into the nasal vaccine and some promising results, although those don't tend to get published yet. We just hear reports of them. So I'd really like to see the data, but we are seeing some very positive reports. I don't think we're going to see them the rest of this calendar year. Maybe we'll see them next year. So I do think there's going to be some more options, but I do think they're a ways off still.
Gotcha. We've got a couple minutes left. And Carl says a Boise clinic that he went to is not requiring patients or medical personnel to wear masks. It's a matter of choice, and a masked patient can ask the doctor or nurse treating them to wear a mask. Carl wants to know if this is a good policy during a surge of COVID, flu, and RSV.
I don't think it is. I do realize that there's a number of practices doing that. I don't think it's a good idea for this reason. We have well established through multiple studies that patients can be infected in hospitals. And most of that occurred particularly when the hospitals were stressed and overwhelmed, like when at the beginning of this year and end of last year, we had to go on crisis standards of care. So it is a threat to you. Obviously, if you're wearing a high quality mask and well-fitting mask, that's great. But oftentimes, they want to examine your nose and throat, and they'll ask you to take your mask off. You're going to be at risk. And I think it's not a good thing. I understand that just like everybody else, a lot of healthcare workers are tired of wearing masks, but we're going to undermine the trust of people who are immunocompromised, people that have chronic illnesses, people that have been doing everything they can to protect themselves. And I think if patients come to healthcare facilities and now realize they are a threat and that's where they're going to get exposed or were exposed, it's going to really erode the public trust. I think it's a big mistake, but I do realize there's a number that are doing it. I don't go to those kind of practices.
Gotcha. All right. We've been speaking with Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System, a current member of Idaho's Coronavirus Task Force. If you have a COVID-19 question, send it. We'll take it. Idaho Matters at boisestate.edu, and we'll ask Dr. Pate next week. Thanks, Dr. Pate, for being on the show.
All right. Thanks, Samantha.
I'm Samantha Wright, filling in for Jim Agudet. You're listening to Idaho Matters.
Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts.
Experiencing the news each day can feel like a journey. With Up First from NPR, it doesn't have to be. Welcome to 15 easy minutes of breaking news, clarity on international and national affairs, all handed over not from some floating voice in the sky, from us, Layla, A, Steve, and me, Rachel. Start your day informed. Subscribe to Up First wherever you get your podcasts.